Welcome back to another Talking Rugby Union podcast. We're going to be picking our best 15s again, but, well, I'm not going to be doing so. We've brought in a special guest for this one, a regular on Talking Rugby Union these days, and it is Charlie Beckett. Charlie, how are things?
Hi, John. Very well, thank you. How are you, mate?
Yeah, no, I'm still locked in my bedroom.
I think we all are. It's just a very strange time at the moment, but it's meant I've had far too long to think about my all-time 15 and make far too many notes. I've got a full bloody A4 page of notes here, ready to go. This has really brought out the inner gnaws in me even more than it ever has before, this task you've given me.
I'm expecting a fantastic line out with your
team. Don't you worry, we'll be running a good line out. That was taken into great detail. My second rows changed 5, 6, 7 times till the pairing I've settled on.
I'm very intrigued by the locks. I must yes. admit that's the one, especially because I think it's because you are a lock, and I think
I think everyone takes more time over their own position.
Yeah. Have you made your team?
I haven't. No, I couldn't quite put myself as championship stalwart that I am in my all-time best 15 ever. I haven't even made the. I've got people I'm going to talk about who didn't make the cut. I didn't even get close. But I think that's understandable when you see the sort of names I've got in and around the squad.
Okay. So, obviously, myself and Chris did this last week. We got somewhat battered online for our
selections. Mm-hmm.
The format, just so I don't know if you listened to the podcast, it doesn't matter if you did or didn't. So we went 15 to 9 and then 1 to 8.
Okay, I can do that.
If that works.
Yeah.
So without much further ado, I think we might as well kick on with a fullback.
Yeah, so before I start, my criteria for it was people I've grown up watching. So basically pre-2003 World Cup, you aren't getting a look in. That's when I can remember consciously watching rugby and have an understanding of who was a good player, who was a good team. So I've taken it from that to that era onwards, really. So I'll put a disclaimer out now. Even though I've watched loads of him on YouTube, Jonah Lomu hasn't made it because I didn't grow up watching him. Otherwise, I get into far too much debate over people in 1995 who I never watched. So that's been my criteria. So talking of 2003, my fullback is Jason Robinson.
Completely understandable.
I mean, I remember watching him in that 2003 World Cup being like, that's how I'm going to play. And my dad being like, Charles, that's not how you're going to play. Even at the age of 7, we know now that is not how you're going to play. But his feet and what he could do with the ball, the fact he did it both codes is outstanding. There was it was a tough one, though, because the Israel Dag and Folau both could have come in with shouts. The early, obviously judged purely on what they do on a pitch. I'm not going to get into the whole of the debate around Israel Folau. But they were both, at one point, I think about 2014, they were quite comfortably the two best fullbacks in the world around that era. Mm. I was a big fan growing up of James O'Connor when he made his debut for the Wallabies and he was still in school. That really appealed to me. I thought he was incredible. And then obviously he's another one who lost his way a little bit, but now is back in form the way he was playing last year for Australia. But he was a great fullback. And then I considered Rob Kearney as well, because I think when he was at his best in that Leinster team, he was outstanding. But for me, Jason Robinson got the nod at fullback, which I'm sure he'll be pleased to hear if he's watching.
I'm sure he will be.
Yeah, I doubt he would miss out on this.
Well, to be fair, I mean, there's a very increased chance at the minute because everyone has a lot of time on their hands.
So yeah.
We'll tell ourselves that he's watching it right now. And hello, Jason, if you are watching or listening.
Yes.
Because for anyone that, I didn't say this at the start, this is both a video and audio this time, which is an experiment on TRU.
Yes, you want to see my lovely face, which disclaimer around the word lovely, you can watch it on YouTube, I believe.
That is the place that we find it. Sorry for everyone that just watched me reach in front of the screen to grab my mug. To have
tea's imperative at the moment. You've got to have a good brew.
Oh, yeah, of course. And then we'll go to right winger.
Okay. So do you want me to run through both my wings at once, or do you want me just to give you one wing and then come to the left wing later on?
Let's do both because it's an axis.
Okay. So on the wings, finishing the back three are and Joe Rokothoko.
Ah, yeah.
So as I said at the start, disclaimer around Lomu, just the fact that I didn't watch him growing up, otherwise he would have been in there. But I went with Habana because he did it for so long. I think you see a lot of wingers who maybe have a season or two seasons at the top, but Habana for 5, 6, 7, 8 years was probably the best winger in the world. Lethal finisher, successful everywhere he went, and good God, scarily quick. And then Joe Rockthock on the other wing just had some of the best feet I've ever seen. And that just X factor that you need in your back three and from your wingers, he just gives him space and some physicality. Good God, the man could hit. But I was, when I was going through it, I was kind of spoilt for choice of the last 17 years of wingers have been quite embarrassment of riches. Like people who missed out, JP Peterson, Tommy Bow, Shane Williams, RD Surveyor, George North, all these, there could be so many more unbelievable wingers, but those are the two I went with just for longevity. And I think they'd complement each other quite nicely.
And of course, they both kind of left that Southern Hemisphere kind of cushion that you could have stayed in and came up to Europe and kind of smashed it out of the park again.
Yeah, did it. They did it in both hemispheres. They didn't just stay where they were comfortable. So yeah, I don't think either of them could have done much more in the game, really.
God, Habana was class. I think he made Chris's team last week as well. And
yeah,
supposedly, lovely man to go with it.
Oh, well, that's just an extra bonus. That, in some ways, is more important.
I like to think so.
Yeah. But no, so they're the wingers. And that is not...
No. Not much ball play, though, in terms of kicking bombs.
Oh, no, they're just going to run. My back three, we're playing some running rugby in the back three.
No Gary Owens.
No, we are running it back.
Right, outside centre. Now, myself and Chris both pricked Brian O'Driscoll.
And so have I.
Yeah.
I couldn't not, really. I think he was arguably the best ever to play, well, for me, the best ever to play in 13. It was his longevity. The thing with O'Driscoll, for me, having watched him from 2003, is the way the game changed and he didn't get left behind. You think between 2003 and 2016, when he finished, whenever it was when he finished, how much rugby changed. And he was always at the forefront. Like, he was the first centre, really, who became like an auxiliary back row. He was in there getting turnovers. Look at the number of turnovers. I'm going to refer back to it a few times, but I think the best club side I've ever watched was Leinster in 2009. And a few of them, when they won the Harkin Cup, they won the three of the four they won. And I will talk about that a lot more in one of the selections I've got later in the team. But he, in the number of turnovers he made in that campaign for a centre was ridiculous. And as the game developed, he just stayed ahead of the curve almost. He was at the forefront of developing the game and changing the way rugby was played. He did it at the top of his game for nearly 20 years, both internationally at club with the Lions. There was no place he didn't perform or step up and be one of the best players on the pitch. Like, the only other people I considered were, on his day, I think Manu is potentially the best 13 in the world. But he's been, and if he'd been fit for the last 5 years, it could be a very different conversation we're having now. But unfortunately for him, he's been plagued by injury, and we probably didn't ever see the absolute best of Manu, knowing him and having trained a lot with him and being absolutely smashed by him. I've seen what he can do. But he didn't quite make it. And then the other two were actually two of my favourite players ever, who didn't quite make the cut. But I think they're very similar players in the fact they played 13 in unbelievable backlines. They probably flew under the radar in their own backlines because the players around them, but they were the glue that held it together. And that's Conrad Smith for the All Blacks and Adam Ashley Cooper for Australia.
Wow, yeah.
The two of them, I think, both did the same job for 10 years for those two massive sides, but got slightly overlooked because of the players who were around them. But I think without them, the backline might have fallen apart. And it was tough to leave either of them out, but it was a no-brainer for me with O'Driscoll.
Oh, Slade, yes. Slade is a great shout within all that, because considering he was such a consistent figure in that All Blacks team in particular.
Yeah, he honestly, like, Nonu and Conrad Smith were the centres for years, and everyone just harked on about Nonu, but I really think it was Conrad Smith who held it together, and I was a big, big fan of his. I like players who are rather unassuming and just go under the radar and just do their job exceptionally. And that's what him and Adam Ashley Cooper did. So it was tough leaving them out, but O'Driscoll's just the man at 13.
Yeah, can't argue with Brian O'Driscoll. It's his autobiography that looks at me on my bookshelf. Which, you know, this now means we're going to move to 12. I'm trying to remember who my 12 is. I selected Dan Carter at 12.
Interesting. Interesting.
I wanted to have, well, Johnny Wilkinson at 10, essentially. Yeah. So from what you just said, obviously, Dan Carter isn't your 12.
No, he's not. 12 is, I think, my roguest selection, the whole 15. And if I'm going to get any stick for anything, it will be this selection. But so I'll just run through the people I've left out before I get to the man I've selected. And I don't think anyone else would make this selection, but I will explain why I did. So I haven't picked for a long time. The 12 shirt in my team was occupied by Jean de Villiers.
Yeah.
But he got the boot last minute at about 11 o'clock last night. Not that I've ever thought of this at all or anything. So it's not Jean de Villiers. It's not Jamie Roberts.
Oh.
It's not Marnonu or Tarnarumanga. They both miss out. Two, Aurélien Rougerie of France.
Okay.
Lamont.
No, I can understand that.
So, one, I think he's an exceptional player in his own right. But what I love about Rougerie is I've made no bones about it. I always dreamed my career hasn't gone how I envisioned. I always dreamed of being a one-club man playing for Leicester my whole career. That's what I wanted to do. He is the one-club man. He's at Clermont for 19 seasons. He made 417 appearances for one club. And anytime they were in a final, they were winning the top 14, they were in those European finals, he was always at the forefront. He was their captain. And around all the massive signings and money they had, they never, ever looked at any of the 12. He was always there. And I just think at the moment, my back line isn't the biggest. He's a big, hard-running 12 who is no-nonsense, got that French flair, and I needed some French flair in my team because he's the only Frenchman to make it. I needed some French flair. But I'm a big fan of Rougerie. I love that his family basically run the town of Clermont?
No.
So the Michelin factory that's there, his dad's like in charge of the Michelin factory, mayor. His mum is high up in politics. He's the Clermont captain. This is what I heard. If this is all true, but I like the envisage that the town of Clermont is just run by the Rougeries. And I'm a big fan of his. So he made my team at 12. But I can understand why anyone would have picked the other four I mentioned.
Wow. Yeah, I remember getting BT Sport for like the first time in 2014, something like that, around that time. And I was watching a Clermont game. And they're like, here is Rougerie at the age of 38. And it's like, what?
Yes. Also, yeah, like to be able to play at the top level at that age, you've got to be an unbelievable professional. Like, you must go about your business in the absolute perfect way. So I think, yeah, for him to be doing that at that age and be at the top of his game is just unbelievable.
But a French team as well.
Yes. Should have won the 2011 World Cup. Got it all wrong in the final.
I remember watching that final. That was rough watching.
Yeah, the Kiwis scored with that line-out move. The prop went through the middle. Can't remember who it was, but the French were the better side in that final by a mile.
Oh, that French team was...
Except...
Yeah, because obviously they'd won the Six Nations in 2010.
Yeah.
And then they kind of a bit subdued in the 2011, then bang, hit the World Cup. And just, it went well, but then just ultimately you can't get over the line.
Yeah.
And I was actually in team, after I released the podcast last week, I went, I should have maybe had Dusatoir in the back row.
Oh, definitely a shout for him. My mum would have Dusatoir in the front row because she's in love with Thierry Dusatoir. But that's a different sort of 15, your best looking 15. He would be the captain of that for my mum.
Then we have to go to fly half because obviously we had the other winger earlier.
Yeah.
Is it good for me to guess, Johnny?
Well, it's one of two at fly half, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Someone would try and make an argument maybe for Johnny Sexton, but in the last 15 years, there it's one of two, isn't it? It's Carter or Wilkinson.
Yeah.
That's the argument. And I've actually been a Judas to my country and gone with Dan Carter.
Fair enough.
I just think, although I think, I don't think there's anything to pick between their goal kicking, to be honest. And while Johnny's probably a stronger defender, was it's Johnny as if I know him, while Wilkinson was probably a stronger defender and bigger hitter, I'd go with Carter. I just think he was that little more dangerous with ball in hand, maybe took the ball to the line a little bit better. And with the back line I've got outside him, I need someone who's going to do that. I feel awful for not picking Johnny Wilkinson. He's the nation's hero. A load of people my age will have started playing rugby because of him and his drop goal and his wonderful right boot. Like, it gets forgotten. The man dropped for the World Cup in the 100th minute with his wrong boot.
Yeah.
He's left footed, but he did it with his right foot. The skill to do that's unbelievable, but I haven't picked him. It'd be Dan Carter. Dan Carter, and if you go back and watch the 2005 Lions series,
yeah.
I think it's the second test is the Carter test, where I think he scores 38 points or something.
And he's playing inside centre, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is, but single-handed, yeah, outside Carlos Spencer. Who, unbelievable. Have you seen the TikTok of Carlos Spencer this week?
Yes.
Where his son's trying for ages that trick shot, and he just comes up and just does it with ease, like, what third time. Amazing. Him at Saints towards the end of his career was great fun to watch.
Oh, especially when he went down to the Championship as well.
Oh, could you imagine if I rolled out on a Saturday playing for Jersey and faced Carlos Spencer?
And they had another all-black fullback as well, who was at Bristol now as a coach.
Not sure.
I can't remember off the top of my head. Right, you tell me your scrum half and I'll get this Google.
Right, so paired with Dan Carter, I've gone for Will Genya.
Excellent shout.
So my reasoning is, it was him, for me, it was him or Aaron Smith, because I didn't get the best of George Gregan. I only got his 2003 World Cup, so he was a bit... I didn't get to watch the best of him. I saw you pick Dupont, but I think he's just too young to make an all-time 15 still. But yeah, he could be. And he ran rings around me at under-18s. We played against each other. I think he was still under-16 or 17. He was playing up. And he absolutely ran rings around us. The other ones I considered were Dmitry Yashvili. I really enjoyed watching. He was a very different sort of scrum half. He was based around his kicking. And the same as that was Ruben Pienaar when he was at Ulster, when they had their runs in the Heineken Cup. He was basically the axis. But I went with Genya because I think he has the best of both games. I think his kicking game was exceptional, but he's lightning ball in hand and a real danger around the edges. And when the Reds won Super Rugby in 2011, with him at 9 and Quay Cooper at 10, I think that's probably the most fun I've had watching a rugby team ever. They were so... I used to get up, I'd set my alarm for 6 or 7 on a Saturday morning before I played for school and be there watching them, watching the Reds play. It was just so much fun to watch them. So it's probably a bit of an emotional pick then. The joy I got when I was... How old would I have been? 15, 16, watching Will Genya play really is one of the reasons I love rugby. So I've gone for him. And I think, him and Carter would be a nice 9-10 axis.
So that fullback for Northampton was Bruce Raihana.
Wore a scrum hat.
Yes, that's the one. And the thing is, what's so interesting about Genya as well, like a bit like Gregan, he's done it for a long time. And he's kind of only really at that World Cup last year. Maybe was when we saw a bit of drop-off.
Yeah.
Maybe. We can make the argument.
Yeah.
And when you actually think about some of the scrum half talent that Australia's got, if we think about Nick White, the Nick Whites of the world that have gone off to the other side of the world and got into that team as well, he's actually remained consistently better. Well, maybe not better, but he's outperformed them at international level and has had that trust given to him by the likes of Michael Checker.
Yeah. As you say, a lot of this for me is people who've done it for a long time. I think that's a true show of greatness, is that you don't just do it for a season or two, you do it for 8, 9, 10 seasons. And there's a lot of that through my team. And as you say with Genya, he's done it at the top for 10 years now, 12 years, whatever it is. So you can't argue. And like I say, it's a bit of an emotional pick as well. I really enjoy watching him. But he makes my team at 9.
Wow. Your backline is very well balanced between Northern and Southern Hemisphere. Well, ish.
It's a 3-4 split, Northern and Southern.
Not too bad.
It couldn't have done it any more balanced. I couldn't have a half and half.
We could have made put two players together and had the...
We could have, but no, I'm not, I've been definitive in my selection. There's no slashes in this. You're in or you're out.
Job making the graphic look
lovely.
Loose head prop. Now I'm thinking who you've played with, Marcus Ayerza. So I'm trying to think of some great names across the years. But is it going to be Jason Leonard?
No. So I've gone with Marcos. Yeah. Oh. So I was really lucky to... I played with him once in his testimonial match. We played against Argentina before they went to the 2015 World Cup. We played again. I've got the shirt in the room somewhere of that we swapped after. The kit man lost his mind because he didn't even swap kits, and we swapped the brand new kit. I was lucky enough to play with him once, but fortunate enough to train with him every day for 2 or 3 years. And everyone saw what he did on the Saturday, and his scrummaging was, for 5, 6 years, he was the best scrummager in the world. And getting to watch him talk about scrummaging in forwards meetings was genuinely a honour to watch the man talk and break down how he scrummaged, what he was thinking about, and watch him take people like Ellis Genge under his wing and teach them was exceptional. Also, the nicest and most polite bloke you'd ever meet in the world.
Oh, wow.
Lovely guy. But yeah, so in my unsuccessful foray into the front row at the end of my Leicester career, I scrummaged against Marcos once. So I'm going down. Not that confident, put it that way. Not confident, thinking, my God, I'm not ready for this. So crouch, bite, set, in we go. I hit. I'm like, right, well, I'm going to be just flying backwards here. And you've never seen a man shaking as hard. I was trying the absolute hardest I could. And I wasn't going anywhere. I was like, oh my God. I'm in stalemate with Marcus Ayrton here. Come on, child, maybe I'm the best tight end in the world at 20 years old. Here we go. I've been doing it 3 months. Maybe I'm the best. And then with me, I couldn't have muttered a word. I was shaking. Marcos started chatting to me and going, right, so if I do this, that means you do that. And the man looked like he was having a cigarette and a cup of tea and was just chatting away. And I was like, oh my God, you're unbelievable.
Wow.
So great guy, unbelievable player. That he's there to, he's to in training, used to mess out with it. He'd lift Tom Croft on a one man lift and be higher than most people's two man lifts. Incredibly strong man. The only other people I did actually consider were Tonga Weir, who obviously is now playing for Ampt Hill, but yes. I think the 2011 Heineken Cup run Saints went on, a lot of it was built around their scrum with him, Majati, and Hartley. Yeah. And I think Tonga Weir that season was potentially the best loose head in the world for a while. So I considered him, but he just didn't have the consistency that Marcos did. And then do you remember a very funny looking man who played loose head for South Africa and Toulouse called Guthrie Steenkamp?
Yes.
Bald, had a little goatee.
Yes.
He, when he got it right, he would destroy scrums for fun. But again, just didn't have the longevity or consistency of Marcos. They were the only two I considered, but that was almost for me as easy as O'Driscoll picking Marcos Ayrton to loose head.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about your time at tight head when we reach the tight head. Because that could also, because I don't want to get it right now, but I have a feeling it could be another Tigers man.
Potentially, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? So we might as well just go to hooker, just get there eventually.
So, hooker, I realised when I was writing them down, South Africa have had a lot of good hookers the last 15 years.
Yes.
So, the one I've chosen Bismarck Duplessis. Because I think he's probably all round, of who I'm going to mention, the best round the pitch and set piece, a scrum, a line out. He's a brilliant line out thrower. He might not be the best line out thrower I'm going to mention, but I think when you put it all together, his set piece, his round the pitch work, everything, he's probably the best of this lot. But the other South Africans, if I was just picking from South Africa, Charlotte Brits is unlucky to miss out. Joan Smith, obviously 2007 World Cup winning captain, and Malcolm Marks all could have had a shout. And then the other one I considered was Dane Coles. But I think he's actually changing the way hookers played, the way he is in the wide channels at the moment, the way the All Blacks utilise him.
Yeah,
I was going for Bismarck. I think physically he's a real essence on the pitch. It seems like when he's carrying on, when he's tackling, his scrummagings. I know a lot it's around the props with him, and in South Africa they've got great props. He's been fortunate in that, but his scrummaging, second to none, and his lineup throwing is exceptional. So I went with Bismarck Duplessis.
Great shout. Is he still with Montpellier, or has he moved back to South Africa?
I'm not 100% sure, I'm honest, but I think for a few years when he was playing for the Springboks and he was at the top of his game, he was quite comfortably the best in the world.
Definitely Duplessis. Sorry for everyone listening and watching. I'm just writing down and I'm doing it on my knee, which isn't always the conducive place to do it. I'm trying to rest a foot on a bookshelf as well. So tight head prop, which is of course a position you know well, Charlie.
I regret trying once.
How long were you like?
I did one season.
Wow.
And then for a number of reasons left Leicester. And no one else wanted me to play prop except Leicester, and I wasn't really enjoying it. So I was like, right, I'll go back to the back five, which was fine.
Fair enough. Did you go to a national club? Did you go to South Leicester or something?
I went to Leicester. Oh no, I went to Leicester Lions. That's the South Leicester Lions raging rivalry. Don't get on the wrong side of that.
The reason I thought it was because in my head, Dan Cole, South Leicester.
They sent me to Leicester Lions. I played in a lovely purple kit.
I think actually the reason I know that is because Max Ashcroft vaguely remembers a young Charlie Beckett trotting out at tight head prop.
It was not. I try not to remember it. But you've mentioned him. My tight head is Dan Cole.
Very understandable.
I think the early 2010s, I think he was for a few seasons best in the world, both scrummaging and round the pitch. Like, he's probably, people who are a bit younger have only watched Coley in the last two or three seasons, maybe only see him as a scrummager. Yeah. As he's got a bit older, he's probably leaned a bit more on that part of his game. But early in his career, because he was a back rower who moved to the front row, early in his career, he was unbelievable around the pitch. He was at the forefront of changing how tight it's played. So now you see the way, I don't think you'd have the Kyle Sinclairs of this world playing the way they do if it hadn't been for the way Dan Cole played in 2011, 2012. Great scrummager, great around the pitch, brilliant at the breakdown. Like I talked about, O'Driscoll making turnovers earlier. Coley, when he gets over the ball, is a tough man to beat. And when I was transitioning, he couldn't have been kinder or more forthcoming with his time for me. I remember one day I'd played on a Saturday and we had a big double day at Leicester. He'd agreed on the Monday that he'd sit with me on the Tuesday, then the day, and go through my clips on the Saturday. And we had a massive double day on the Tuesday. I didn't think we finished up till we were in at 9. I think we finished like 4 o'clock, half four.
Right.
Busy day, long day. It was tough. And he came and found me and said, we're still doing those clips, don't worry. And sat with me till 6 in the evening going through clips. Like, he had a family to get back to, but he'd said to me that he'd go through it with me, and he did. So, honestly, brilliant bloke, brilliant player. One of the driest sense of humour you'll ever meet in your life. But no, for me, that was my selection. I was lucky enough to play with him once when he was coming back from injury in the LV Cup.
Right.
We were playing at Sale and he came on, actually changed the game for us. But he got the nod just over his Leicester teammate, Castro Giovanni, I consider. Wow. I think that was a change of the guard at Leicester. But I think for a time, Castro was probably up there as one of the best in the world. Like, his last season at Leicester was my first season in the academy. Right. So we never actually overlapped. We never met and stuff. But watching him was always good fun. He was larger than life and very flamboyant and exciting to watch, but also very good scrummager. And then probably who I think the best tight end in the world now is Tav Furlong.
Yeah.
I think he's well on his way too. If you have this conversation 3 or 4 seasons' time, it could be him. He just hasn't done it for as long as Coley did, but he's out on his own for me at the moment as best tight end in the world.
And now you mentioned, obviously, Dan started off his life in the back row, and then we also look at another front row at Tigers, which is Tom Youngs, who was obviously started in the centres, and we can even look to Harry Thacker, who's obviously not with Tigers anymore.
Yeah.
Did Tigers do that a lot? Is that something that happens where you have the conversations about changing positions to maintain a career?
I don't really know. I don't know how it happened for Coley and for Tom, but they were both, like, Tom Youngs was very helpful with me when I was changed as well, because obviously he'd done it late in his career, and it's a drastic change to go from 12 to hookers, a massive, massive change. I don't know if Tigers do it particularly. I just think they saw opportunities there. And you look at it, the other two have been extremely successful moves. If I'd stayed at Leicester and carried on with it, we don't know. But for a number of reasons, the right call for me was to leave Leicester when I did. And I went back to the back five. I don't regret it. As I said, I wasn't particularly enjoying playing front row, but they did it because they thought that was going to give me the best chance to play Premiership and international rugby. Whether it would have, I don't know. We'll never know. But I don't know if it's something they look for, they look to do especially. But when they've done it, they've been pretty successful with it.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, just thought I'd ask the question. See what nuggets we could get out of that.
Oh, yeah.
right, now, your favourite position group of them all.
Oh, I've gone back and forth with the second rows. Oh. It's been a long, old debate. I was tossing and turning in bed last night thinking if I made the right call. No, I stuck with it. I haven't together, so two bigger, heavier, less athletic second rows together because they wouldn't have a line. So that's the way I've thought.
Yeah.
So at number four and captaining the side is Martin Johnson.
Yes.
And number five is Victor Matfield.
Wow.
So I'm going to run you through why, and then I'll talk about who didn't quite make the cut, and there are some serious names. So for me, Johnson is a purely emotional pick in the fact that growing up, all I wanted to be was Martin Johnson. I watched him lift the World Cup and that's all I wanted. It was to lift the World Cup when I was older. He was very, very good at the job he did. He might not have been the most brilliant rugby player in the world. I think he's the first to admit, the most skillful, but he was there to do the grunt work, to be physical, to take the line out. He was a good line out forward. people don't consider him, but you look at the lineups he took, he was good. He was a good lineup forward. Was never the caller because he played with Ben Kay at Leicester and England, who obviously was a great lineup caller. But he was also there to put the fear of God into the opposition, one of the most intimidating men to ever go on a rugby pitch. And yeah, he was my only non-negotiable, really, in the fact that I grew up wanting to be Martin Johnson. I played rugby because I'm a rugby family, but I properly fell in love with watching him in 2003 and wanting to be him and just envisaging everything he'd done. So that's why he's in and captain. And then Victor Matfield, for me, ran the greatest line out the world's ever seen. That South African line out. Now, he had an embarrassment of riches to call to. Get me wrong. But speaking to boys who I know at Northampton, so like Sir Lewis Ludlam and stuff, who've been there, to him talk about how he calls a line out, why he calls, the way he sees line outs is like nothing they've ever seen before. So I think for me, the greatest lineup caller that I've seen, and also an incredible player in his own right, horribly athletic and skillful. Like, do you remember the chip and chase he did in 2010 against Australia?
I can't say I do, actually.
So, right, you need to go on YouTube after this. So it's their third, I watched it again last night, they're 31-6 down, the last play of the first half, at home to Australia. And he gets the ball and makes a break. I think he just thinks, right, well, I don't really care here. Chips it over the fullback, runs round the fullback, catches it and offloads to the centre who scores.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. And any second row who has the guts and then the skill to do that makes a team for me.
Fair enough.
I'll now tell you why it was so hard to pick these two, though, because listen to the people I've had to leave out. When picking Martin Johnson, I left out Fabien Pelouse of the same era for France, who was just another big, scary man and captain. 2014 World Player of the Year, Brodie Retallick.
Yeah.
Who, for a second row to win World Player of the Year, is crazy.
Mad.
And it was hard to pick Victor Matfield and not pick Backes Botha with him, because they just come as a pair.
Yeah.
So, and I'm a big fan of Backes. I just think he's brilliant. But it was, they're my enforcer second row. So it was tough to leave them out. And then on the more maybe line, oh, and Brad Thorne, who I had the pleasure of working with at Leicester when he was 40 years old. 40 years old and still playing Premiership rugby. I've never seen anyone as good a professional as him. And then when I was picking Victor Matfield, I had to leave out Sam Whitelock, Alwyn Jones, and Paul O'Connell. So a real embarrassment of riches for rugby in the second row in the last 15 years, really. Like, there are brilliant second rows I haven't even mentioned. Like, the English second rows at the moment now, the South African second rows at the moment now, like Etzebeth, Diego, Toje, Cruz, Laws, Barrett in New Zealand. Like, there's so many good second rows at the moment. It's crazy. And second rows are becoming more and more athletic and basically just two more back rows at the moment, the way it's going. But yeah, I went with Johnson and Matfield and I'm happy with that. I thought a lot about that.
I can genuinely tell you
it's almost like they're in front of me and I've got to tell them who's picked for the final. I've taken it that seriously.
Oh.
I'm going to sit them down and say, listen, Alwyn, you're not making it because of this, mate. But I don't, thankfully.
No, thank God, because they're big men as well.
Oh, yeah.
Scary guys. Well, they're not scary. I'm sure they're all lovely. I'm just trying to think. I just picked Jamie Cudmore for the sake
Canadian.
Of it. Yeah,
Canadian.
But, I mean, there we go.
Yeah, that was an emotional call.
I stand by it. He, you know, we've got Martin Johnson.
Excellent player.
Oh,
playing that Clermont team we were speaking about earlier.
Yeah.
Excellent player, Jamie Cudmore.
Brilliant. Doesn't get the credit he deserves, I don't think.
No, a lot of second rows don't, Joe.
Most valuable position group last season, I think.
Well, not in the championship, but I have nothing. I ain't seen any of that money.
Blindside flanker.
Okay, so this is another one that I really thought a lot about because I grew up playing blindside. So yeah. I played blindside all my England age groups at Leicester, Bromwich, Prop. It was only Gloucester that made me full-time second row. A lot of the time I'd move into the second row from the blindside, but that was the first time I was seen as just a second row mainly. I was always back row slash second row, and then I've become second row slash back row, which happens when most back rows reach about 30. It's happened to me at 20. So my favourite player growing up for a long time was Tom Croft. And I think his 2009 Lions tour is one of the best tours anyone's ever had. He also scored 12 semi-final against Hammonds that I was lucky to watch live. I was lucky to meet Crofty. I've played with him in pre-season. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. I used to get so nervous around him at the club that I'd do embarrassing things. Like I'd always ask stupid questions when he was around or panic and bump into things and knock him over. I was like a little schoolgirl around Tom Croft, but I haven't picked him. I considered Richard Hill, but I didn't pick Richard Hill.
Oh, God.
I think that back row in 2003 that won the World Cup for England, I think, is the best back row unit has ever been. The Hill back Delalio, yeah, as a definitely. Three, won the best ever. I was a huge fan growing up of Jerome Kano.
Yeah.
I think he was unbelievable. And same with Willem Albert to South Africa, was a wrecking ball. But I said I'd come back to the 2009 Leinster team. Can you remember who played six for them that year?
Oh, no.
He's not Irish.
No, he's like the one that wasn't.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So I think if you want to know how to play six, go and watch Rocky Elsom play for Leinster in 2009. They beat Leicester, I think, in the quarterfinal. And I was a big Leicester fan, so I was gutted. But he was phenomenal. And essentially, he, on the back of that season, got the Aussie captaincy and picked for the Wallabies and went to the 2011 World Cup as captain.
Right.
But just incredible. Athletic, physical, unassuming. Like, the man who flies under the radar in the pack, but is always there when it's important, like a good six should be.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable. Like, I was in awe of him that season, and I couldn't look past that. But there was a lot of very good candidates at six.
My position as well was number six.
Yes. Yeah, all the best people play six.
Yeah. Just Joe just getting there.
I read my team to Sarah last night, and when I read the back row, she went, "Oh, I didn't make it." Said sorry, yes.
We could have had a little.
No, I'm not going cross gender because then you get into a whole different debate, don't you? Whole different debate.
That is true. So yeah. we haven't seen each other since we saw each other at the game at Quinn's, didn't we? The England
World. When the world was normal still.
It was teetering though. Wasn't it?
You could still go to a big sporting event. They were still being on.
Well, because obviously I remember I shook your hand outside and I shook your dad's hand as well.
Yeah.
And then I went inside. Everyone's tapping elbows.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, my dad, who by the way is outraged at not making my team.
I was going to ask actually.
I said, Dad, I don't remember watching you play. And his reply was, well, I was past my best by the time you were born anyway. I was like, right, okay, there you go.
He might as well just blame you, really.
Yeah, he'd argue that he should have the number one shirt, but no, I didn't. I wasn't going to give him that one.
Oh, fair enough. Oh, that seemed a long time ago now.
It does. A lot of things happen. It's only been 3 or 4 weeks, but lots changed since then.
The world is on its head.
Yes.
Yeah. I came back and had a sore throat for like 2-3 days after. I was like,
the world's on its head, but we're still here talking about rugby, and that's the important thing.
Oh, because rugby's going to be here throughout.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll always be there.
Open side.
Again, loads of really good candidates, but there was only one for me, really. So boys who I'm going to have a tough conversation with, who didn't make the squad, met team, Pocock, Warburton, O'Brien, Hooper, Schaltberger, all unbelievable players, but they're just not Richie McCaw, are they?
No. Like,
it was almost as easy as O'Driscoll. He's just to do it for 15 years for the All Blacks, to win two World Cups, to just unbelievable man, player. Like, yeah, it was pretty easy for me to pick Richie McCaw there. And not much more to be said about that, really. Just, he is Richie McCaw.
I remember him being incredibly polarising, but now he's not playing, or since he's finished playing, he's just the best open side ever.
I think he was polarising. I think a lot of people thought that he maybe got decisions that other people wouldn't.
Right.
And he got away with things because he was Richie McCaw with the refs now. We'll never know the answer to that, will we? But if he did, it was only because he was so good at the start of his career that he earned that right. And I know no one should have the right to have any different decision than anyone else. But there's a reason if he was getting that he was, wasn't it? It was because he was just so bloody good at what he did. So I'd say that's probably why. But I just thought he was unbelievable his whole career. Like he took them to the 2011 World Cup on one leg. Like,
yeah.
And just was so talismanic for that side. Like, they had great sevens as well, but if he dropped out, like they lost Carter in that World Cup and they could come back from it. Stephen Donald played in the final. Like I think if they'd lost McCaw, that would have been them done. He was just so talismanic. Like, getting him on that pitch was the most important thing for them.
We talk about test match animals. He's probably right there up there at the top.
Yeah, the top. Absolutely.
And then, obviously, it falls down to final position, number 8.
Oh, this was really tough.
Yeah.
And the whole way through this, I've said I've picked on people on their longevity, being able to do it for season after season.
Right.
This is the one position I haven't. So, I was going to pick Sergio Parisse.
Ooh.
Because the man carried Italy for years. I had 3 Stade Français tops just because I loved watching him play in those shirts.
Yeah.
I had some of their outrageous shirts growing up. I got them for my birthday. The way I describe him is Parisse just oozes class. Like, everything he did was just that bit flair. That it was just classy. But he didn't make it. And then I didn't go for Reader either, who's the other one of our generation, really. That's the debate, isn't it? Parisse or Kieran Reid. But I didn't go for Kieran Reid, who I've written in my notes, probably the best all-round number 8 I've ever seen, but I haven't picked him. I really used to enjoy watching Louis Picamole.
Yes.
I thought he was just a man mountain. I remember watching him in the snow game at Leicester in 2013, I believe they played. I remember watching it at Welford Road, and he was unbelievable, enormous man. Used to wear a massive arm guard and barrel people, but he didn't make it either. I've gone for a man who probably was only at the top of his game for 1 or 2 seasons.
Oh, and
it completely goes against everything I said, but when he was at the top, he was, I think, probably the best ball carrier I've ever seen. He was explosive, athletic, a nightmare. Any number 8 who can play, can come off the bench and go onto the wing against the Lions, is a man who makes my team at 8. And that's Pierre Spies. Played for South Africa, played for the Blue Bulls, and he was an animal. And yeah, he didn't do it that long at the top, but 2009, 2010, 2008, that time, he was playing rugby on a different planet to anyone else. Like everything I wish I could be as an athlete is Pierre Spies. And everything I'm not as an athlete is Pierre Spies. He was unbelievable. And then he just dropped off the face of the world. Like, I don't really know what happened to him. He came back a bit, but was never there. But for those 2 seasons, he was just playing a different game to everyone else. And that again, is probably an emotional one that I remember loving watching him play. Looking at it now, if you were Sergio Parisse or Kieran Reid, you'd be absolutely livid you've not been picked for him, if you cared. But that's what I'm going with. I've gone for... My pack's not the most exciting pack in the world until you get to PSV, so then we've got a bit of a player.
Was Delalio not part of the conversation for you?
He could have been. I think, again, with Delalio, I probably didn't see him. I saw him in 2003, but my memory is probably of 2007 Delalio, where he wasn't what he was, if that makes sense. He's probably past his best, and that probably just tainted my view slightly.
Mm-hmm.
That's my abiding memory of Delalio. One of my favourite rugby pictures ever, though, is... him and Martin Corrie having each other by the scruff of the neck, Leicester and Wasp, and that was the big rivalry in English rugby. But no, Delalio could have been in there, but just, probably just, when I remember watching him the most, he was just past his best, probably.
Yeah, because he took the international hiatus and then came out of it for 2007. So obviously
he took a sabbatical before sabbaticals were cool.
Yeah, and now everyone's doing it. All the
Everyone does it, yeah. Well, we're all taking a sabbatical in the championship for the rest of the season.
Until when?
Whenever that is. World sport is on a sabbatical at the moment.
Yeah, and obviously, today was the day we found out league standings, final, and all that stuff.
Yeah, but that's my team, and I will maintain that would beat any other 15 anyone puts out.
I mean, we'll definitely get some different opinions.
And I'm head coach. That's the role I've given myself, is Charlie Beckett, head coach. And you know what? I'm going to give the power to the players. I'm going to let them use their experience. I'll just sit back and watch.
Do you know what I think people forget? I think people forget that Martin Johnson played for the New Zealand under-21s.
Yeah, he did. They tried to keep him in New Zealand. My dad always tells quite a funny story about Johnson. So towards the end of Dad's career, start of Johnson's, it's the late 90s, mid-90s, when rugby was potentially a bit more violent, let's say.
Yeah.
There wasn't TMO, the touch judges didn't really get involved. Dad said Waterloo, our local club, were playing Leicester in the cup. So Waterloo were championship team, Leicester were premiership, I think. And But there was that was when there was a lot of internationals playing the championship as well. It was still that the two leagues were a lot more competitive. Like Waterloo beat Bath, just lost to Quinns in the cup. Like it was a lot more competitive.
Right.
But Dad said everyone was talking about this kid from Leicester who just got back from New Zealand. He was the next big thing. So that's her first line out. What you're doing as a kid who fancied himself is you just step across and punch him. So he said, first line out, he just stepped across, bang, he's hit Johnson. That's so he's turned around to run off and get on with the game, thinking that'll sort him. He said, this hand's just come on his shoulder, spun him round and clocked him right back like that. And he said, that was when he knew Johnson was the real deal.
Fair enough. Hang on, I'm just going to consult.
Oh, yeah, there, see if that made the cut.
Let's see. I want to see. It's going to either be under, what is it going to be? It's going to be under Beckett or...
I'm not sure Martin Johnson will remember Mark Beckett punching him. I think he had bigger things in his career.
Look, I mean, David Beckham's made it. somehow.
Beckham's just made it over Beckett. There it is.
He just made it.
Story of my life.
Gosh, I've not opened this in a long time. Well, let's see, Waterloo, that could be interesting.
I don't think so.
Oh, that's a shame. That would have been good.
He doesn't quite remember it. I think it's more impressive for Mark Beckett to tell a Martin Johnson story than Martin Johnson to tell a Mark Beckett story.
Well, yeah, that's true, to be fair.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's your team. Wow. A lot more well thought out than mine, I think.
Oh, as I said, like, this kind of helped me remember how much I love rugby. Like, just thinking about people I'd watched and thinking to... I said to you off air at the start, like, all I used to do growing up was... talk about the best team of Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, best Six Nations. I just make best 15s all the time. So this was just like being a kid again for me. And I overthought it far too much. Like I said, I've got all the notes in the world on it here.
Wow.
But I could have given you 2, 3, 4, 5 15s of teams I've grown up. Like, I love this. So I really, really enjoyed doing this. And it killed a good day or two in lockdown for me, which is important. But no, I really enjoyed this. It's been a lot of fun.
Brilliant. And what we'll do, we'll talk a bit about what you're doing on Instagram Live, which is isolation conversations.
Which rhymes. Someone messaged me and went, do you realise that rhymes?
Oh, wow.
Said, yes, that's the whole point. Like, I did that on purpose.
Name and shame.
Oh, no, I won't. Bless her. But, yeah, I'm just, so, obviously, you know, like, I was hosting the Jersey podcast. I quite enjoy the sound of my own voice. I'm quite a social person. So not chatting to people every day. Like, I normally go to work with my 30 best mates every day. So not chatting is a bit weird for me. I think a lot of people have sat around. I think I'm in a fortunate position that I've played with and trained with a lot of really good rugby players who've got things to say and interesting stories to tell. So basically every other day at the moment, I'm going live at between midday and 2 on Instagram, just chatting to one of the players I played with. We have a chat about lockdown, how they're passing their time, any stories. We play teammates where I just ask them who of people they play with is most likely this, least likely that, like who they'd least like to be in lockdown with, etc. Just chance for lads to take the mick out of each other. And then we chat always at the end about their favourite rugby moments. And we just have a bit of a chat and things go, always end up nowhere near where I plan them to, but we have a laugh. And I was speaking to Mark Axon about the other day, if anyone out there, if they're having a tough time through lockdown, like if anyone's lonely or by himself, if it makes 10 minutes, they normally go about 40 minutes, but if they just watch 10 minutes of it, if it brightens one's day for 10 minutes, then we've done our job. It's just a good bit of fun, bit of a laugh. And so I've had a few boys on, I've got the next few weeks lined up because we could be in this for the long run. But yeah, it's just a good laugh and it fills my time, fills their time, and hopefully people watching it enjoy it.
Yeah, of course. You've got Ed Slater on Saturday. This podcast is probably going to be out after that. So
yeah,
we hope.
But Ed Slater's Saturday. And then I've got lined up for next week. I've got Callum Brayley, Joe Batley and Billy Burns lined up for next week.
Guess.
It'll be a good laugh. And then hopefully the week after that, there's a slim chance we might be out of lockdown, but I'm not sure about that. So I'll have to keep thinking about other people I could have on.
Wow. Yeah. Do you know the Ed Slater story about what he said to me?
About your shoes?
Yes.
Yes, okay, yeah.
All right, we won't dwell into that. Delve into
yes.
That. tell him hello.
I will do. I'll say the man with the silly shoes says hello.
They weren't silly. They were... Hang on, have I got them?
They're somewhere in there.
They're downstairs. Right. I don't use them. I don't know why they're downstairs. No, Charlie, thank you very much for coming on.
No, thank you, Joe. I realised I loved it.
No, it's been good catching up as well. Obviously, when was the last time we spoke? Last week?
Probably last week.
It's excellent team. There will be a graphic accompanying this that you could use if you want.
Yeah, happy days.
Where can people follow you for isolation?
Oh, that's something. Right, you can follow me on Twitter at @Charlie_Beckett. That's pretty inventive. And then on Instagram at the equally as inventive @CBeckett95.
There we go.
Yeah, I can't. And if you want to find, and I will have in the next week or two, I've got some issues on my laptop at the moment, but I'm going to have for Talking Rugby Union what the world needs during lockdown. I will have the ultimate starting 15 made out of WWE wrestlers.
Oh no.
That's going to be my next article because I was far too serious in my last few articles, so I need to have one for that.
To be fair, you weren't helped by the top news stories at the time with your last
year. And everyone's talking about coronavirus, so I think everyone needs a bit of nonsense in their life, and Charlie Beckett's the man for that.
Top 10 wrestlers to smack down coronavirus.
Oh, there's something. That's a whole different story.
There we go. No, Charlie, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
You can follow Talking Rugby Union at Talk Rugby Union on Twitter, at Talking Rugby Union on Instagram. Just type in Talking Rugby Union into Facebook and you'll find it there. Please like, comment, subscribe, review this podcast wherever you are consuming this content.
Unless you're going to be mean about my team, then don't. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I got a lot about mine.
I just want praise. I want people going, Charlie, that's an amazing choice. And that's it. That's all I want to hear, guys.
They're great. It's a great team. There's just like, I think there's like two. Yeah, there's two. I'd say there's two choices that people will mainly.
Oh yeah. Test. Oh yeah. No, we'll see. But no, thanks for having me on, Joe.
No, thank you very much. And I'm sure you'll hear and see us next time.
Absolutely.